Why do disc golfers make terrible secret agents?
Because they're very distracted.
Because they always leave a trail of chains.
Wow. Welcome to 2 minutes is the current placeholder name that we have come up with. We've asked ChatGPT for names, and we don't like any of them. So it's 2 minutes until further notice.
Yeah, I am Simon Lazat, of course, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Mr. Eagle McMahon and Mr. Joey Tamale. Become legendary.
We've been thinking about doing something like this for probably at least a year, and definitely spent the last couple weeks planning this out. Just, I'm excited that we get to attempt to share the conversations that we have as friends with you guys out in the world. And if you are listening, you have somehow found this episode organically. You have found it without any marketing, because as a slight joke, we are releasing this first episode with no promotion. So if you found this, you are one of the first fans, and it's basically up to you whether or not you want to tell the world about this podcast.
Fans yet, Joey.
Maybe there's no one.
We still
have
to make them.
As soon as they hear
our
voices, they're fans.
So if that's you, if you're listening, it's the fate of this popularity of this podcast is in your hands for a few days.
And I want to throw out a little disclaimer right off the bat. Disclaimers. We are disc golfers creating a podcast, but this isn't necessarily a disc golf podcast. Of course, disc golf will be talked about, but it's three friends talking, and who knows what will come from that.
Yeah, Eagle and I, of course, have been professional players for over a decade at this point, touring full-time, and Joey's been in the game also at least for 8-9 years now, doing a lot of media stuff. He's been also on tour competing. I mean, he has all the rights of being a professional player as well, I'd say. But Joey brings a nice, fun side of knowledge with him about all things disc golf media. And I think this trio might be the one.
I think we encompass.
Unless someone gets fired down the road.
I think we encompass three different kind of arcs in the arc of the professional disc golf career. We have somebody kind of on the younger end at the beginning, trying to make a name for himself on the road. In me, we have obviously two very established pros with brands in both of you guys, but in sort of different stages of your off the course life. Obviously, Simon, you have a family. You're kind of certainly like looking forward and looking beyond just the end of your playing days. And Eagles, you're in the meat of your career, coming off of some years of injury, looking to kind of like reestablish a little bit of your dominance. And I think that provides really interesting perspective because all of us are friends, but we all kind of have a different spot right now on the story.
We all want to beat each other.
So we have a bunch of fun segments that we have spent the last few weeks writing up, and we're just going to kind of pick the ones that we want to use each episode. It will be a variety of fun segments, and yeah, I'm excited.
I think the only way to start this off is, what's been going on in y'all's life? We are coming off the holiday season. I know Joey's been up to some cool stuff. I know Simon's been living the family life. And I know that I've been doing a bunch of stuff also. So who wants to start? Joey, what have you been doing?
Well, the off-season has been very fun for me. Obviously, I feel like for all of us, the tour can feel a bit of survival mode. So the first few weeks coming back always just feel like a bit of a kind of deep breath in, deep breath out, sleeping in a little bit. But I was really motivated to train and really focus a lot on being consistent this off season. It's one of those times in the year where There's a lot of self-accountability, and something that I've really been working on is committing consistently to little routine things that I know are pushing me towards my long-term goals. So the two big things for me this year have been, this off-season, have been eating well, just focusing on trying to like eliminate processed foods and eating like a lot more just like whole foods, and then also like exercising, committing to exercise, and committing to like working every day in my basement on strengthening my right arm, but also like working on some technique stuff. So that's been a lot of the personal side. And then on the business side, I've been started teaching disc golf lessons for the first time. So that's been really fun. Have a bunch of individuals coming into my basement, giving them form advice. And then I've also been selling my first ever signature disc. I got my little logo on a disc. And yeah, I mean, I had to learn how to essentially package and receive all these orders, and bought my little printer. And I have like a whole little shipping station in the back of my house. So I've been busy with those three things. And obviously the holidays were nice, but this week definitely been getting back to my routines. That's really my key that I honestly took directly from you, Eagle, which is just like, I used to want to travel a ton in the off season, and now it's so much different. I want to not move at all for 3 months and just like have the same routines that I know are pushing me towards a better athlete next year.
As a touring disc golfer, the off season is an absolutely critical time, because it's really the only time you can have any sort of normal life and have any sort of routine. So I know for myself, I get so excited for the off season because I know it's like, it's crunch time. It's how I get ready for the next season, how I organize everything and make it so I can succeed the following season. So Paul McBeth once said, you win your tournaments in the off season. And I truly believe that. You create habits, and that's how you execute during the year, based off of all the good habits that you created during the downtime.
Wow. I've never won a tournament in the off season.
Yes, you have.
Actually, remember, yeah, we in Switzerland? Won a lot. Yeah, you're right. Well,
you almost had a six pack.
Yeah, I know. I had a six pack halfway showing for about 3 weeks of my life. I want to get back there. No, I have been pretty busy as well. I also love off season. It just gives me more time with family. And you know, after 11 years on the road, the whole travel thing is not as exciting and fun anymore as it once was. So it's a nice break from that. I started therapy, which has been very interesting, trying to learn a bit more about myself and diving a bit deeper and just trying to kind of understand why I sometimes feel what I feel. Very interesting stuff. And other than that, I've been doing a lot of family stuff, of course, hanging out with the kids. Emmett is turning 3 in a month, and Mia is 8 months old now, and she's slowly becoming a little person, which is fun to watch. She is an absolute sweetheart. She is so cute. I can barely handle it. Emmett is absolutely rowdy and destroys everything. He doesn't listen to us, and we have multiple mental breakdowns every day because of him. But that's part of the journey, as I hear from other people. And on the disc golf side of things, I haven't been playing too much. I joined Team Challenge, New England Disc Golf Team Challenge, which is, if you're a disc golfer, you might have heard of that. It is basically the biggest disc golf league in the nation, probably in the world. I don't even know how many leagues are within this league and how many teams are within those leagues. It is pretty mind-blowing stuff. And I joined a local course here that have some of my local friends. Casey White, for example, plays for the team as well. Marky Chapp.
Which course is it?
Buffumville Dam.
Okay.
That's your course?
Is my home course. But yeah, so you play home matches, you play away matches. We played last month, we played in Connecticut at a course I haven't played yet. Page Park was really fun. And you get matched up in a singles match play event. and then you take lunch. The home team always cooks for everyone, which is so freaking impressive. And like, it is definitely the main reason I'm joining this, is to get those amazing buffet lunches that people make for you. Yeah. And then you, round two is a doubles match where you just play straight up stroke play against another doubles team. And it is pretty serious stuff. I mean, people go out there and it's like, that's like their disc golf season is in New England. It's like the winter is like when stuff goes down and when things get serious around the New England Team Challenge. And next week I'm playing in Maine. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
How competitive is it?
That's basically all I've been playing disc golf. I've played like one
round. It seems like a really big deal.
Like, but like for you, Simon, like when you're like, how seriously are you taking it when you're out there?
I kind of do it mainly just so I play disc golf at all.
Right.
And I don't just completely neglect my job. And what I'm really starting to notice is that I feel like if I take longer breaks, like I do in the off season, like I won't throw a disc for like a week or sometimes even 2 weeks. Like throwing the disc becomes way more fun. First of all, if you take a break, but the short game, like your touch and your putts, they just freaking leave. Like I am useless on the putting green if I don't putt multiple times per week. Like I can throw a disc fine. I can throw it hard and far and accurate, but anywhere outside 20 feet, it's basically a complete gamble where that putt is going to hit the basket or most likely the ground, actually. So, yeah, it's just fun to kind of go out there and be rusty. And, I mean, I have really competitive matches against players who I should be beating by 10 strokes every round. But here up in New England, some of these really short technical tracks, I mean, anything can happen, especially because I play a lot of these courses blind. And it's like a really fun, unique challenge that I can set myself to play against like some local guy on his home course that I've never played and see if I can still like pull off the win being like as rusty as I am. And I'm yet to lose a match. So
wow,
that's pretty nice.
Congrats.
Undefeated.
I am still undefeated. But also, obviously, I know that these leagues aren't made for like touring professionals. It's obviously like a different, it's just a different vibe out there. But I really enjoy it. It makes me feel a bit more back to like the grassroots and being part of the community, because the pro tour gets a bit lonely sometimes. I think we've all felt that way.
But you're right,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, not naming any names. A lot of players get scared to play in like these grassroots like tags matches. And I haven't done it in a little while, but it's definitely something that I like to do as well, because playing a course like Valmont, I think you've both played Valmont here in Boulder. It's so short and almost anybody can beat you out there. Like the last couple of times I've played, my dad's beaten me by one stroke, and it's frustrating. Wow. But it's just like it's about execution. If everybody can throw the shot, then you're not special out there. You gotta play.
Yeah, I said to myself, like at some point in the season at USDGC Monday qualifying, I was like, it almost feels like the easier the shot is for me, like sometimes the harder it is for me to pull it off, because it's like I expect, in the same way that like going out to your little local league as a touring pro, like it should be easy, like the same way like a dead straight 200 foot upshot should be easy. But like then you have all these expectations that get created once you think, oh, this should be easy. You've just instantly created expectations. And I think Simon's point rings true. Like you put a 980 rated guy on a home course and you level out that playing field so fast between a touring pro and a local pro. Once you eliminate distance, like once you eliminate the need to throw accurately above 400 feet, you've like essentially taking away the touring pro's biggest advantage outside of their mental game. So if they don't have like a wicked mental game, that's what's going to get exposed, I think, in those.
Here's a little bit of a hot take. Like usually the push is to make everything harder and harder and more difficult. But I think in a weird roundabout way, it's a little bit of a cop-out, because harder is sometimes a little bit easier because you don't have to execute. You right. can rely on your second shot. Whereas if it's super easy, you need to execute. And if you don't, then you're not going to get the result you want. So like, for example, like Fountain Hills, I'm about to play Memorial in like 2 weeks. And Found Hills is an easy course, but it's a course where you could actually shoot over par pretty easily because if you don't execute, you're in the water. So, like,
would you say,
we'll talk about it more in this podcast, but like, I feel like all three of us have a similar vision of disc golf being a little bit more simple and having execution be the key. So, like, not necessarily having these crazy technical holes or long holes, but having these fair holes that you need to execute, otherwise you're falling behind.
Yeah. I think it's like, do you get more nervous to play Northwoods Black or Fountain Hills? Like, which one brings you more nerves? The nerves of, like, knowing that you have to shoot 15 under and you basically, if you make a mistake, like, you're getting lapped by people, or the, like, the nerves of, like, knowing how far over par you could go and, like, how... But, like, I feel like it's more nervous for me to play Fountain Hills, knowing how much you have to shred. Knowing at Northwoods, like, all you have to do is get 3 or 4 birdies and not, like, do anything else that impressive. Just, like, kind of survive. And that still takes... I mean, they obviously, those rounds still take incredible skill both times. But mentally, it seems a bit easier, Eagle, like you're saying. Not having that thought of, like, oh, I have to birdie 80% of the holes out here and make no mistakes towards an over par score on any hole. And I think that's I like the variety. I've always said that. I think that the tour benefits from having a mix between Vista and Northwoods and everything in between. Like, I think it's unique to have the sprint.
Don't
to
say
the,
Vista. Vista never should come back. Fountain Hills. Say Fountain Hills.
Fountain Hills. Fountain Hills. I think the sprint to the finish courses, even like Waco, like the older course, the Beast at Waco, like those sprint to the finish, I think that is a different mental challenge for top players to be that on for that many holes in a row coming down the stretch. And then Northwoods is also a fun challenge because it doesn't require
as
much. Yes, they're both great, and I love each of them, and I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Fountain Hills back on the tour.
I swear, like, I started my year at Northwood Black, which was a really bad idea, and then my next event was OTB Open, Swenson Park, and I had the thought that this is barely the same game. There, disc golf on Northwood Black and disc golf at Swenson Park is almost two completely different games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the shot shapes, what it takes mentally. It's honestly kind of crazy.
I think that's the beauty of the game. We have, like, obviously golf is such a good game. That's why it's so big and successful. But disc golf, even though it's played at the same principle, we have so many more possible playing fields. Because all a golf ball can do is go up, go down. And of course, you can curve it slightly, but there's only so much you can do with a golf ball. With a disc, I mean, the options are basically limitless. You can skip it off the ground. You can roll it. You can bend it left to right. You can throw almost 90-degree angles. You can go high, low, whatever. And, yeah, my God, we have freaking thousands of different discs options that all fly slightly different. And I think we should embrace that more. I'm sometimes a bit depressed by playing these same courses over and over and just making them longer and longer and harder and tighter. It's just, I think we're sometimes going a bit in a wrong direction, but that seems to be not the most popular opinion of touring pros, as far as I've heard.
I think, like, there's a divide.
What's the easiest course on tour right now? Like, what was the easiest course that we played this past year?
I think it depends on your strengths a bit of what you perceive as the easiest. Do you just mean which one scores the lowest, or do you mean which one?
Yeah,
the easiest.
Preserve was probably the lowest.
I was thinking of Preserve. Jonesboro. That's a good example.
Jonesboro and Preserve probably are close on easy. How easy they feel, because there's not that much that can go wrong.
Yeah, Jonesboro is one of those examples for me that it's just like. Like, would you guys change it? I think it's, I mean, it's easy, but, like, is it bad? I don't think it's that bad.
My viewpoint is, if you look at, like, a Jonesboro, if you look at a Preserve, or even, honestly, you know, Vermont is starting to score pretty low.
Yeah.
And usually the talk during the event is how it needs to be tougher the following year. I want both. Like, I love the fact that Northwoods exists. But I simultaneously want those courses to stay the same and people to realize, like what we're talking about, that sometimes a sprint is necessary that you need to execute. So I think there needs to be a synergistic relationship on tour. Like,
yes,
I think there, I love that there's a push to make more and more challenging courses, and that's going to increase the level of play. But remember the roots. Well, play Fountain Hills. Like,
it's all about how you define hard too, in my opinion. Like, everybody says, oh, we need to make this course harder. Well, also, like, having to birdie out the last six holes, that's hard. Like, that is not, it's just a different kind of hard. Like, everybody's like, oh, these courses need to get harder. And so they are saying they want it to be harder to birdie each specific hole. Whereas in, like, what you're saying is that toughness can be looked at as toughness to birdie this individual hole, or the course is so shreddable that it's going to force you into having to birdie everything, which is also tough in its own right. Like, that is also difficult. It's not, it's just two different types of difficulty. And that's what people get lost in.
Yeah. One tough is you can't make any mistakes. And the other tough is you have to be incredible to score.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're both fun.
I feel like disc golf is sometimes struggling a bit to find the line between tough and fair. And I think we're sometimes crossing the line into the unfair territory where they make it tough by just making it unfair. And sometimes, like, good shots get really punished and bad shots can get rewarded. And I think disc golf is out of whack there often, not all the time, but often. And I think we should do a course design podcast at some point and really dive deep into this, because I have a lot of thoughts, of course. But should we try a segment out?
Yeah, do you want to do one of yours, or do you want us to do one?
Well, I'm not even sure exactly what we have, but I've been eager to try this blind ranking out that I prepared, that I want to be a reoccurring category. What do you call it?
Segment.
Segment.
A segment. Wow, my English. Sorry, guys. And yeah, I think I'll make them all disc golf related, of course. We're disc golfers.
At least for this one.
Huh?
At least for this one. We should do some, like, snacks, like restaurants on tour, like that kind of stuff too.
We could do that too. I think mostly people want us talking about disc golf, but yeah, we're gonna try. Oh, and then we have Simon Wines too. Oh gosh, I forgot about that. Very good. Okay, so basically, what blind rankings are is that I'm going to give you five, in this case, scenarios, and you have to rank them blind from one to five, one being like the most and five being the least. And this is something we've talked about a couple times already on tour this year, and this ranking list is basically the worst feelings in disc golf. And you have to rank them without knowing what comes next. Therefore, okay, it's called blind ranking. So one is the worst, and five is the least bad.
Okay.
And I just kind of came up with this yesterday while I was thinking on what I could do. All right. I think you're both just going to answer, right? And then we can kind of discuss why you put it where you put it.
Yep.
Okay, let's do it. All right. Worst feelings of disc golf. Number one, losing your favorite disc.
I'm going to put it at three.
Why? It's medium bad.
It's medium bad because right off the top of my head, there's a few feelings that I hate way worse than losing my favorite disc. I like to,
but you don't know what comes next. You don't know what.
That's pretty middle of the road for me though, because I try not to have too many favorite discs. Of course it happens, but I try my very hardest to adhere to the mindset that any disc is replaceable.
Oh, maybe you do that as a defense mechanism because losing your favorite disc would be really hurtful.
I mean, it's not good, but I for me, I genuinely believe it's middle of the road bad.
Okay, fair enough. Joey?
Well, I lost my favorite disc this year in Lake Tahoe.
How did it feel?
I'm putting it at...
Took a stupid hyzer.
I'm putting... I'm putting it at 2 because it sucked. It was easily one of my worst moments of the whole year because I could see it, and I came back like 5 or 6 times to try to get it out of this tree with a slingshot. I made like 2 different hardware store trips. I don't think there's like almost anything that could be worse. And then it came down and it had my name on it and nobody got it. So someone random found it and it didn't get back to me. And it was an irreplaceable old patent pending panic. And yeah, that's number 2. Absolutely number 2 for me.
All right. You guys have to obviously.
Do you answer?
Well, I know what's coming next, so it's not fair for me to rank.
Okay.
I think a bonus rank's good. The people want to know Simon's list.
I can give my list when we're through the 5.
Okay.
Number 2. Getting the green flag from the spotter to later find out you're actually OB.
Ooh. I hate that.
That is
really
horrible.
I hate that.
I'm putting it at 3 for me. Definitely not as bad as losing my favorite disc, and there's got to be something worse than both of those. So going with, oh man, but could there be something? I'll put it at 4. I'm going to put it at 4.
I'm putting it at 4 as well, because I love our spotters, but they're there volunteering, and sometimes they don't necessarily know certain rules, and you know, I can't be too mad at them. So, and if I am that attached to that one particular shot, it is very frustrating, but I gotta let it go. So
I think
4.
The only way I would be like actually frustrated enough, more than losing my favorite disc at a spotter, is if it hit them, like double G at Ledgestone.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where I would be like, that would be more upsetting to me than losing my favorite disc. So yeah, 4 for
this
me.
This is so sad. It's
if you hit the spotter, does it keep you in bounds or does it kick you out of bounds?
Keeps me out.
Yeah, that's, I don't like that. The time where James Conrad threw a hyzer shot at Vista and hit a water bottle, it was like totally coming back in bounds.
Wasn't
that's
the
a pretty bad feeling.
That and then Nate Perkins at the Waco playoff in 20, whichever year he played Germ in the playoff, I'm pretty sure he hit a water bottle too, and that was like,
no, that was nowhere near going.
It wasn't going.
I don't think that was coming back in bounds. Maybe it would have been a miracle.
Yeah. So. It's pretty mind-blowing how unbelievably attached we are to our throw right after it lands, and we're unsure if it's inbounds or out of bounds. Like, all we want in that moment is to know if we're inbounds or out of bounds. Like, anything else in life does not matter that in that second. Like, it only matters if we're inbounds
completely
or out of
true.
Bounds.
Yeah.
It's pretty mind-blowing. All right, okay, just so you know, for the next couple ones, I didn't create any, like, crazy scenarios that are, like, super unlikely to happen that just, like, would feel really, really bad, of course. Like,
like stepping on a landmine or something.
Yeah, you're not, like, going to slip and break your leg and your disc golf career is over. So that's not going to be a feeling in this.
Typical disc golf scenarios.
Yeah, okay, here's number 3. So, wait, Eagle has 3 and 4 and Joey has 2 and 4. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I love this one that's coming now. Some random person asking you how your round is going after you just took a double bogey.
2. Definitely 2.
That is so hard.
For some reason, one of my biggest pet peeves in disc golf is when somebody asks me how my round's going. Like, maybe that's obviously a lack of maturity in the mental game.
Yeah.
But if somebody comes up and is like, Eagle, I saw that you're playing pretty good. Like, they tell me that, I can't stand it. It's an immediate jinx.
Yeah.
Like, at Worlds this year, I was playing a really good round, round 1 at, what was it, New London. I was, like, really happy with my round, and this guy's like, you're killing it. You're up at the top of the leaderboard. And then immediately I took a double bogey to finish. And it was, like, so mentally tough for me.
Yeah,
and
that is hard.
It's something I'm working on, but... That's a 2 for me. Anything that involves people mentioning my score, that's tough.
You got to be above your score, Eagle.
I do. That's something I'm working on.
Wow.
Let's just
that's
say
the
this.
Podcast name, Above Your Score.
Above Your Score.
Or something with scorecard. I'll figure out a name eventually. Joey.
I'm putting mine at 5 because that has not really occurred to me ever. I'm not getting approached by random fans. I get to sulk off all of my double bogeys by myself. I don't have anybody bothering me.
Must be nice.
Yeah, I know. I will agree. Like, there are many times where I look up. I mean, I've been friends with both of you for 4 or 5 years now, and there are many times where I look up in admiration of like a lot of the things that you guys get to do with your brand. But there are plenty of moments where at fly marts and big kind of disc golf gatherings that I am very sort of grateful, or at least I recognize the fact that I can just walk through these crowds basically untouched, and it is a very different experience for guys like you. So I am appreciative of that fact, especially for something like this, like Simon is just bringing up. Like, that situation does never happen to me.
Yeah, there's definitely moments sometimes where I watch like a bit smaller name pros just like kind of walk around the course or a fly mart like that and just be like on their own, kind of just like doing their thing, like no one's bothering them.
They're partying.
And I'm like looking at them being like, oh man, I wish I could do that. I wish I could just like walk around and just be to myself a bit and kind of do whatever I want. But then I wouldn't get paid.
Right.
And then I was right. I'm okay with what's happening.
It's a double-edged sword. The greatest instance of this for me was, what year is it? I think it was like 2020 or 2021 at DDO.
Is this what I think this is? Yes.
I bought a Kakashi Sensei from Naruto cosplay outfit to go to the block party in. And I made it down the entire block party street where people were just looking at me and like, who is this guy? They didn't know it was me. And then, of course, I came back and people started figuring out. The funniest one was Grady Shu came up to me and asked, oh my God, can I get a picture? Because he's like a big Naruto fan and he Wow. didn't even know it was me. But then word got out that Eagle's cosplaying as Kakashi. And then I was at a booth signing discs.
Yeah, I was with you.
Like Simon said.
I walked right next to you. And so it was crazy because the first lap through, everybody just sort of was like weirded out. But the moment one person tried to ask and you stopped to like sign one disc, it was like, I mean, I looked around, I looked away, and then I looked back and you had like 10 people in line. And I was like, oh my God, mm-hmm. he's not moving any. He's not going anywhere now.
Right.
All right, next one, Simon.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my goals is just to be more consistent at being like good with just my role in disc golf and kind of just accepting it and being just ready for any kind of interactions, because we just can't escape it and you might as well just enjoy it, because
it truly is a privilege. Like,
yes,
it like I'm very grateful because my life is completely transformed because of disc golf, and then whoever is watching, like, I truly am grateful for all the fans out there, because without them, we would not be doing this podcast.
All right, so you have, what, 2, 3, 4, and I have 2, 4, 5.
So Eagle only has the worst and the least worst left.
And I can only put... yeah.
Well, I have 3 more written down, so I have to decide which 2 of them I'm going to name, because... okay, let's do this one. I don't know if this one applies to Joey that much, but I'm going to try. So this one I called competing without wanting to compete. Basically being out there and feeling like you don't want to be there.
That's number one for me, because that means that I've like ultimately failed completely. That means there's
been... Have you had that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's bad. That one's bad.
It's an empty, hollow feeling, and you're usually playing really bad because of it. You want to go home. You are questioning your life. Yeah, I think that's a one for me.
I mean, it's
that's number one.
For me, it's a very specific round. It's the Waco this year. I was going into the second round. Yeah, the second round, and I needed to shoot decent, and I had really collapsed on that tough stretch on the Beast, 16, 17, 18, the first round, to ruin what was like a pretty solid round. And I came in and had two... I was playing with Eric Oakley, and I had 2 dead center spit throughs on the first 2 holes of the golf course. And I gave up. I remember it's the only round all year where I completely, after that, I was like, because I was either going to blow up or I was going to give up, and I didn't want to blow up, and so I just completely gave up. It's the only round the rest of the year that I played without caring at all. Like, I threw so fast, I didn't take any time, and at the end of that, once I realized what I had done, I was just like, okay, you are spending thousands and thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours and thousands of miles driving to be out here chasing your dream. Like, that is the one unacceptable thing to do. Like, do anything else but give up on yourself. And that was, like, what I told myself going into the third round at the Beast, because at that point, nothing mattered. I wasn't going to make the cut, and I actually was able to play one of my better rounds of the year. But that was absolutely the worst mental moment of the year, because I completely gave up.
Yeah.
I can completely mirror that. There's been so many times, and I hope that I've learned my lesson, but in disc golf, it's really hard for you to learn your lesson and get it to stick. It seems like there's been so many times where I've had a very similar instance in Joey. Like, for example, this year, I played the European Open round one. I didn't have an umbrella, and there was just this total downpour. I got like an email before the round saying like, my rental car company from Norway was going to charge me like $500 because there was like a little scratch on the door. So I was wet, angry. I like didn't get off to a good start. And then we had to like keep going back to the Beast, or not the Beast, the Monster, because of this rain delay. And then by the time the day was over, I like convinced myself that this tournament was stupid and I don't care. And that was my mentality for the entire event. And like, it's a vicious cycle because you just keep getting worse and worse. And then you convince yourself that like, this scenario is stupid. You start playing a victim mentality and you're like, the world is out to get you. And it's a gross feeling. And I always look back and say, if I only would have just kept my head in the game, even if I played terrible, at the very least, I would be proud of my effort. Like, at the end of those days, I'm not very happy looking myself in the mirror. And that's a big punch in the gut. Mm-hmm. Number one for me.
No, I agree. I use the football analogy, or like, it's like, you have to go into every round with like a good game plan. Like the play, like sometimes the play isn't going to work out. Like, you know, a receiver drops the ball or something like doesn't happen right. But if you don't come into that with the good play call, you're not even setting yourself up for a chance of success.
You got to set yourself up for success.
Yeah, you got to. So
keep your head in the game.
So that
wise words of Zac Efron in High School Musical.
We have one.
Get your head in the game.
We have one left.
One more. For me, it's going to be a five no matter what.
Yeah.
What's yours, Joey?
Three. Yeah, three.
Three.
All right. Okay, I have two left here, and I want to see which one I like better for this scenario.
I like my list so far.
Yeah. Okay, well, this one, I'm going to use this one. It's a bit broad. I can try to give, like, examples, but basically it is kind of the big topic of getting really unlucky.
Oh.
Like, basically where stuff just happens where you're just like...
That's my number one.
There is no way this just
happens. That's my number one.
Out,
number
roll one. Into the water, or... freaking skip off of the freaking OB stake and stay OB by an inch. Like, just stuff where you're just like pulling your hair out of your skull, just being like, this can't be happening. What are the odds?
That's my number one. I don't even know. I'm so, I regret everything. I'm sad it's my number three, but that is the most frustrating thing for me.
Yeah.
That truly is frustrating, but I think my list is perfect for me, because if that is number one for me, then I'm not in a good state of mind. You have to realize that once you throw your shot, disc golf is a little bit of a gamble. We're all gamblers out there. Like, there's no certainty that the disc is going to go exactly where you want to. So like, when I'm functioning from a high level of mind, I can quantify it. But man, it could be a one, it could be a five for me, five or one. So I like my list.
Well, good job, Eagle.
That
Joey.
Was fun. I really enjoyed it. That was more fun than I thought that was going to be. I really enjoyed those scenarios.
Yeah, blind. It's a bit on the negative side, of course. It's maybe a sad start to the podcast journey that we all have, but maybe next week we can do best.
We can do positives
in disc golf. Huh?
We can do the positives.
Yeah, best feelings in disc golf. Next week I'll get it ready.
We'll explore both sides of the coin. We'll explore the polarities in the universe. Universe.
You just got to get the negatives out of the way sometimes to make room for the for
yin
the
and yang, baby.
Eagle.
Okay, that was the blind ranking segment. What's next, boys?
What's next?
I want an in the lab from Eagle McMahon. I want to hear about some off-season stuff for the body and the mind.
In the lab. Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, I kind of have like a routine that I like to adhere to. Usually I've been like training like 4 to 5 times a week in prior off seasons. This year I'm doing 3 times a week. And I see my PT once a week. And that's been really nice. I've been getting a little bit more disc golf in. I've been trying to touch a disc at least 5 times a week, and that can mean going out to play or just, you know, putting in the garage for like 5 minutes, just keeping that feel. Like Simon said, if you sleep on your short game, it goes out the window. So just keeping that as sharp as I can so it's easy to pick back up on when it's time to play, that's been crucial. I've been really trying to dial in my diet. For the past month, I've been probably eating the healthiest I almost ever have been. So I've been feeling good. I was going through some kind of like die off, like detox symptoms, but now feeling good. I've lost a little bit of the bad weight per se. Feel like I'm getting stronger in the gym. And then, you know, just trying to work on how my mind works, because without a healthy mind, nothing really matters. So I've started a thing where I do 100 days of gratitude, where each morning I list 3 things I'm grateful for, same as at night. It's easy to say that you're just grateful for everything in life, but that's a little too broad. You really want to condition yourself on what's good in your life, and making sure I think start the day with that and end the day with that has been really powerful for me and has really set a good tone. So I think the mind is often overlooked. Mind is an embodied process. So basically that means that what's happening physiologically and mentally have a lot of connection to one another. So if I have good diet and good mind, that's the whole package right there. As long as like a big problem last year, I feel like my game, like I was looking in the mirror and it kind of alludes back to giving up or not feeling great about yourself. Like that can play a big toll on how you compete. So for me, it's like, if I can truly feel good about myself each and every day in my mind and body, those are the main pillars for success on the disc golf course. And the last few years, like, or honestly, like at this point, 8-9 years, everything I do is to get birdies on the disc golf course and become a better person in general. So that's kind of been my thing in the lab. So I'd say the off season's going really good. Got Memorial coming up, and things are really positive.
It kind of blows my mind that you are working on your diet.
Diet
you
is
have
such
had
a-
the best and cleanest diet of anyone I've ever met in my life for
well, it's
an
very
entire
subjective
time
it's
I've
very
known you.
Subjective because everybody's different. Everybody's needs are different. Everybody has different food intolerances, and like to truly dial it in is really tough, and it honestly is a lifetime of exploration because the food quality is always changing, your body's always changing, and you know, even the in terms of the season, like your dietary needs are always different. And like I'm still learning. Like I plan to have this diet obsession for the rest of my life because it's
so
one of the
sad.
Main pillars of health. It's not sad. It's amazing.
No, it's sad for me that you are so far ahead of the game compared to me when it comes to diet and when it comes to like any sort of like self-care and fitness. Like, I'm just struggling to freak eating a salad once a week. I'm eating freaking pizza and cheeseburgers and mac and cheese and basically whatever I want, whenever I want. And my huge goal is to get anywhere. Yeah, of course you're jealous. No, I'm jealous that you have the freaking discipline to just freaking do it. I mean, I was listening to a self-help book yesterday. It's called The Mountain Is You. Have you heard of that book?
Is that Tony Robbins?
No, it's by some girl. I don't remember the author's name, but it basically is like a motivational book trying to like help you get over your own self, because you're the only person that's really in your way is yourself basically at all times ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it hits so many things on the nose for me of like self-sabotage and stuff like that, where you just like know what you should do, but you just don't do it because you're lazy basically. And just falling back into these bad habits and laziness that you know is not bad, but it's like comfortable, but at the same time it makes you uncomfortable because you know you shouldn't be doing it. I've been doing it obviously for my entire life, just doing whatever I want whenever I want it, and it's so hard for me to get free from that. And I thought you were like a master at that, and then hearing you say that you're like really working on that still and struggling every day, and still it's changing all the time. It's like For me, I need like a goal that I'm going to reach, but it just feels like it's just always going to be a journey and it's never going to be easy. And that's just, it scares me.
There's many different paradigms to explore and ways to look at it. The way I look at it is longevity is number one, and I want to be ripped at 50. I want to be ripped at 60. It's like, I want to do the things I love all my life. And one of the greatest levers you can pull is diet and nutrition. So I love eating food and I love making food and exploring that process. I love to cook ever since I was a kid. I was vegan for 10 years. So my relationship with eating is kind of different than a lot of people. And, you know, I'm no expert by any means, but I have a broad set of knowledge when it comes to the directions I should go. And it's it is tough. It really is tough. And it kind of goes back to the not caring on the disc golf course, or like convincing yourself that it's okay not to care. There's a certain moment when saying you don't care that you feel like you're in power, you're in control, like I'm the driver. But immediately after, like, you can say like, I'm going to eat this pizza, and like, cause I don't care. And you know, it's going to be fine. But then immediately later you feel the pain from eating it. You feel like, why did I do that?
This morning I had a freaking waffle with Nutella and banana.
It's like
breakfast and I hated myself afterwards.
In the moment it feels really good. But my mindset, what my dad has always told me, is like, you got to deny the lesser to gain the greater. Like, it's going to be tough at first, but as you get the momentum, it's going to be easier and easier, and you're going to build that self-confidence after a while.
So that's
my mindset. One thing that I can tell the listeners and maybe even you guys, one app that's really good is called Habit Share. It's basically a habit tracker where you go in and you can create a habit. You can have accountability buddies where you share your habits with. And each day you go in and you mark off the day that you successfully did your habit. So, for example, like I've done breath work and meditation for the past like 3 years straight. So
every
it's
day.
Like every day, and you mark it off, and then you see that you're 98% or 99% or 100% on a habit, and it makes you feel good. You want to keep the ball rolling, and you can do that with whatever, cold showers, you know, gratitude practice, disc golf practice. Like, that's something that kind of helps me and gives you motivation to keep going. Like, having all those little tricks is crucial.
You know, allow me to bridge the gap a little between the two, because I think I'm like, as far as like the sort of self-help, self-health world is concerned, and sort of like, I mean, Eagle represents, I think you guys each represent two ends of the spectrum, and I'm like in the middle, because I'm like was definitely like a few years ago very much like in the Simon camp, and I would say I'm like kind of like pushing my needle towards the Eagle route, but Eagle is, I mean, the first thing we have to realize, you and me, Simon, is that like Eagle is at a level of discipline that is virtually unmatched by almost anybody. There's like two people in my life that I've met that share his commitment to the mundane routines in sacrifice or in the understanding of long-term goals. Like that's what you're saying, Simon, is just like you have all these things that you want to do.
I appreciate it, but I feel like I have a long way to go.
No, and that's part of what makes you so disciplined, is it's that, like, you know, what do our brains have all these ideas, all these long-term goals that we want to achieve, but then at the same time you have these like short-term urges, right? Which is sugar and screens and, you know, whatever else that might be. And unfortunately, this world, this society is set up perfectly to prey on those urges. They are set up to exploit those urges almost and make it so easy for you to give in to those like daily urges that the people who can actually separate themselves from that and stick to these long-term goals are that much more impressive to me than it would have been like 70 years ago. And I just think that it can be really difficult for a lot of people to kind of get up every day and do the thing that they don't want to do because some part of their brain is telling them that at the end of the 90 times that they're going to do it, there will be a benefit. But like
most people's brains have created an unconscious program that they run every day in their life, and they don't even think about what they're doing. They wake up, they have their routine, and they don't even question it. And if you want to break out of it, let's say before you eat a meal, just look at your meal, take a deep breath, and just say, I'm about to eat this meal. And that brings awareness and intention to each and every situation. And that's the start to creating better habits. Like, it can be very, very small, but it can have profound effects. Like, just knowing what you're doing before you do it is crucial. And it's silly to say, because it's like, obviously, I know I'm about to eat this meal. I know I'm about to watch this movie. But like, the crazy thing is it's hard to watch a TV show now without having your phone in your hand watching something else.
That's
which is crazy.
It's
like making like the intentional decision, like, all right, I'm going to watch this football game, and I'm just going to watch this football game and not think about any other stuff. Like, doing one thing at a time and being aware that you're doing it, I think could benefit so many people. And I say that for myself too, because I want to watch TV with my phone in my hand, scrolling the internet, going to Ulti World, seeing who signed where. So it's like, we have so many distractions nowadays, and like just doing one thing at a time could help so many people, including myself.
So we have two segments that we'll be using regularly on this show. One of them is called In the Lab, which you just got a bit of an abbreviated version, where we just talk about things that we're working on at home to improve our product on the field, and it can be anything. And then another segment that we want to run regularly is Inside the Circle of Your Mind, which is Eagle bringing cool mental topics, which we've sort of tangented right into there. So this is the type of stuff that a lot of us talk about regularly when we're not recording a podcast, and this is the types of discussions that I envision us getting into in future episodes as well. It's just fun. It's what we like to think about.
Right. What Joey alluded to at the beginning of the podcast is like we're kind of going for more of an organic feel, but as the season phases in, there we'll have a lot of different topics surrounding these topics that we will bring to the table. So it'll be interesting to see how we evolve ourselves throughout the year.
Yeah.
So we have two segments down, and I think we each get a segment. I think three segments is good. Joey, do you have anything to bring to the table before we wrap it up?
I think that it would be good to do just a little like in the news, what's been happening in the most recent news in a slight disc golf or non-disc golf context. For me, my little thing that I've been doing the last few weeks, it is the Professional Darts World Championships at the end of every year. It starts in mid-December. It takes a break for Christmas, and it finishes 3 days ago. So I've been paying a ton of attention to that, as well as playing a lot of darts, which is a sport that Simon and I both enjoy quite a bit. And the kid, he did it. The 17-year-old phenom who made his professional debut only 1 year ago completed probably a very similar year to what Gannon Burr did. A very dominant year. He didn't win everything, but he won a lot of big tournaments, and he capped it off by winning his first world championship, youngest player to ever do it in darts history. And it wasn't even really that close. He kind of dominated. He only had one match the whole tournament where he was ever challenged. And, I mean, the final,
he wasn't challenged. He was just nervous.
Yeah.
Because it was the first match.
Right.
I guess the Ryan Joyce game was also challenging.
That's what I'm saying. I was talking about Ryan Joyce. But what did you think, Simon? You watched a lot of matches. Did you enjoy watching the kid take it all the way?
Yeah, I found the final a bit boring because it was so one-sided. But no, I am beyond impressed. Not necessarily how good Luke Littler is at darts, because I can like wrap my head around being that good at something if you've been doing it for so long, and he's been doing it since he's like 2 years old or even younger than that. Like there's some funny videos of him actually playing when he was like in diapers, throwing at like a magnetic dartboard. I just don't understand how at 17 years old you can be so pro, like in your mind. Like he is just so cool. He is like just on point. He's like not bothered by the media. He's not bothered by the pressure and the attention. He just freaking goes on stage, plays darts, waves, says thank you, bye. And he's just a 17-year-old kid who's for some reason somehow just dominates, not just with his skill, but with his freaking confidence and mind. Like, that's something.
Is he the Gannon Bird of darts?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. Gannon, I don't know. Gannon is very good at that too, but Luke Littler is like at another level of fame, and darts is obviously way ahead of disc golf when it comes to money and pressure and media attention and stuff. Obviously in the US it's not that big, but in Europe and other places in the world it's a big deal. Like there's like hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in sponsorships, and it's a huge event. Like thousands of people go to these live events and it's huge on TV. So
it's one of our
obviously very impressive and very good too, but it's just on a different level.
It's one of me and Simon's bucket list trips is to make the trip to London to watch the World Championships 1 year. But it's the way that he like commands the crowd. He's like, it's like he already knows what to do. Like when he hits the big numbers, the way he engages with them, like it's not even like he's like a polite kid. It's like he's already like a showman. Like he knows exactly what to do, and like he like engages the crowd. He's super confident. He's celebrating with everybody else. And the final for me was Michael Van Gerwen just like nerves for like the first three legs or the first four sets. It was just he just did not show up, and Luke Littler didn't have to even come close to elevating his level of play. And that's like, even when he went, by the time he figured out how to like score, it was over. So we'll end our darts news there. In disc golf news, I would say the biggest signing is Ezra Robinson announced a 2-year deal with Discraft. Guy who finished in the top five in the world last year. I don't think enough people give that credit right there. I mean, what's he, 1046 rated, top five player in the world? I mean, Ezra Robinson, like, put some respect on that guy's name.
He's probably Joey, my winning favorite. Is everything. Winning is everything. So dumb. No, I totally agree.
Ezra's probably one of my favorite people to watch putt. Like, no matter where he's at, he, like, puts such a good run on the basket. So I'm excited to see what he does. And, you know, shout out to Discraft. Like, we're all MVP sponsor players, but we can see a brand doing good. And Discraft is a great company.
Oh, so, absolutely. I can say that while being under contract for MVP, that Discraft is a fantastic place to play disc golf, like, as a sponsor. It's just
Michigan companies, baby.
They treat their players well. And no, I mean, it's cool to see. I think a lot of people could learn a lot of things from the Robinson brothers, because I think, you know, you, Eagle, and Anthony Barella have sort of set this expectation of, like, okay, in order to be an elite disc golfer, you need to be 6'4", lanky, and you have to have power in both directions, forehand and backhand. And the Robinson brothers just absolutely, like, put that statement on its head. They're like, what? We don't even – and they and mm-hmm. To be honest, like, I wouldn't say – I'm sure on big distance lines they're like comfortably going well over 500 feet, but I wouldn't say these guys are throwing 500 plus foot golf shots in tournaments. And that is another stereotype that I think too many people think is necessary on tour.
No, I look at both of their games and, you know, I try to mimic their game, because where I feel like I could use the most work is just that laser beam control backhand. And Isaac and even Ezra, they just, like, they fillet lines. Growing up in Georgia and just
good podcast
having
name.
That
fillet lines.
Yeah. They just, they do it so well, and it's really inspiring. And I find myself even mimicking their forms, trying to cultivate somewhat of a better backhand. You know, they're very inspiring, and it's cool to have. I think they're both 1046 rated. That's crazy.
Unreal. Wish I had a bro out there I could practice with and freaking, like, imagine you have a brother and he's just doing the same thing you are out there playing disc golf. You can, like, motivate each other and battle each other. Like, it would be so fun. My family's in freaking Germany and I'm all alone.
I mean, I was talking to Gannon before the World Championships this year, and he was telling me about how competitive all of their practice rounds had been, because you're right. I mean, he's grown up with that brother. And obviously their dad's been taking them disc golfing since forever. And he was, at the beginning, I'm sure their dad was good enough that it was like a three-way competition before the two of them became competitive. But mm-hmm. I think in their little squad with Alden and Gannon, the four of them, and probably Gavin Babcock as well, those five guys, I bet they're all like brothers now. Like, I bet those guys, the way that, like, Kevin and Luke Humphreys want to beat each other at everything, I bet all those five guys just, like, all they want to do is beat each other in those rounds. And Gannon was telling me before Worlds at the players meeting, he was just like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Isaac right now, but he's literally shredding all of us in every scoring round. And Gannon called it at the players' meeting. He said Isaac was going to win because he was just absolutely destroying everybody in these rounds. And I don't know if that's, like, the type of practice you're playing when it's that competitive. I mean, maybe that's why he felt so confident, you know, out there that whole week.
Their little posse they've definitely elevated all their games to a
yes.
different level. Like, I think like Gavin is a perfect example. Like, Gavin's always been a solid player, but where did he finish in Pro Tour points? He was like
13th?
Top 13th. Like, he grinds it out. And, you know, Gavin's a great guy too. So it's like, he has the work ethic, he has the discipline. And, you know, I'm not going to say he's not talented, because he definitely is, but comparatively speaking, like, a lot of players don't have more, like, intrinsic power, you know, putting capabilities, but Gavin puts it together. And it's like, I think Gavin's, like, he's the working man's disc golfer idol, in my opinion, because, like, he's proving that you don't have to have, like, exceptional talents to be a top 15 player.
Damn, I still love you, Gavin. I still love you.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to counter you, honestly,
Gavin's
Eagle.
Great.
I think his forehand
his
is
forehand.
I think
his
forehand
really good.
I think his forehand is elite, and I also think his putting is, like, sneaky, almost one of the best. But, like, what separates him is his discipline, in my opinion. Like, obviously he comes from a background of being a high-level
wrestler.
Athlete. Yeah. And I think that whole group, and I really think Gannon has really led that charge. He's really, like, vocally, outwardly pushing all those guys, and in like a good way. And the same,
it's
in the
be
same,
kind of weird too, because he's the youngest of the group too. But well, he's like, just, you know, there, we have certain pride. Like, you don't want a younger person to beat you.
Sure.
So like, there, Ganon definitely pushes all those guys too. To step it up, which is really cool.
And I'm friends with Ganon. We played we play a triples tournament every year in Iowa together. I've done a decent amount of hanging out. And he I credit him with a lot of my own backhand form improvements that I've done. And he has been extremely, almost like proactive with me. Like, almost like I have messaged him most of the time, but there are times where he is messaging me like, how's that form work going? Like, he is absolutely holding me accountable, and I really appreciate that. And I think he does the same with that whole friend group. So I'm excited to see what Ezra can do this year with Discraft. I'm sure he's chasing an Elite Series win, and he absolutely has all the tools to do it. So that is the biggest signing right now. There are plenty more to come, I'm sure, with
There's
the amount
of
departures. Yeah, we got a lot of departures. A lot of departure announcements.
When shooting this, it's January 5th. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to come out, so we don't know. I imagine that in the next few days, we'll probably know a lot more. But things are going to get spicy.
Things are going to get
spicy. I
can't
wait. There's so many announcements I'm so looking forward to, because obviously we're in the inner circle. We know a bit more than the public can know right now, but
I honestly really don't know that much.
I feel like I know a lot.
I know. Yeah. I know things I shouldn't say.
No, we can't say. We can't say. It's not
we can't
fair.
Say. We'll wait till next episode. This has been so much fun. I really enjoyed it. This was flowed a lot easier than I was anticipating. And I hope you guys all enjoyed the first episode of 2 minutes. We just decided
what about 3 minutes because
three,
we're
3 minutes.
3 minutes. We're each a minute.
Name.
We'll
is
figure out a name, or you know, name. If you guys like 3 minutes or 2 minutes or 20 minutes or how many minutes have we even been going?
Hour 15.
Not bad.
Hour 15. That's pretty perfect. I think we're gonna aim for like 45 minutes to an hour and a half, generally speaking. But yeah, this has been a ton of fun.
I really enjoy it.
Very good, guys. Let's try to do this once a week. I'm excited. This is going to be a thing that'll help me remember stuff better and start taking notes of what's going on in my life and kind of coming up with fun things to talk and think about. And we hope the listeners enjoy, and I get to see you guys' faces more often. Yay.
This is going to be so much fun. We're going to get to know each other even more than we already do.
And once we're on tour, we might be able to do this actually in one room, because right now Eagle's obviously in Colorado, Joey's in Minnesota, I'm in Massachusetts, and it's already flowing.
It's already flowing. Well, everyone,
the drinks are flowing.
It's a good podcast name.
It's already flowing. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Hope that you guys enjoyed our blabberings, and we will see you next week.
We'll hear you next week.
Peace. Good night.
Good night. Keep on dreaming.
We never did a sync for our audio tracks. Should we do that before we click pause? Oh, okay. Well, then they just have to figure it out.